dear Django, go Richanda Bone. Chanda bole, kupta nidnak yau mai ap bisachira kole, kupta nidra yau mai ap bisachira kole. Samsara vitarehi Pajiva Maliai se Samsara vitarehi Viharu vile to me Vijarabare Uliharu vile to me Avijara Bore Toma Re Rite Ami Ainu Avatara Toma Re Rite Ami Ainu Avatara Manuara Kaya Chaitomara Ami Vina Manuara Kaya Chaitomara Ene Chayas Shati Maya Achibara Lagi Eneche Ashwini Maya Achibara Lagi Uri Nama Mahantra Lautuli Maki Adi Nama Lao tu li ma ki Bhakati venu prabhu Charane tiya Bhakati venu prabhu Charane ori Nama Mantra Loi La Magia Sei Ari Nama Mantra Loi La Magia Chichago Chichago Gorachana Sajira Gole Gota Nidra Yaumaya Pisajira Gole Hey Prabhupada Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Uribo Haribo Haribo Jai Om.
Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa Paramitakacharya, also Teda Sitashi Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhayachanana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharishila Prabhupad Kijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Kijai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrind Kijai, Namacharya Srila Kailas Thakur Kijai, Param Sai Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrind Kijai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopa Gopinath Sayamakunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturidam Kijai, Jagannathaswami Kijai, Yuvanamai Kijai, Srimati Dalasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarni. Do I have the translation of this? Jeev Jago. Let me look. Anyway, I'll give a rough translation of it, even if I can't find the translation of it. Okay. So, rough translation. Wake up, sleeping souls. Lord Chaitanya is calling. How long have you been sleeping in the lap of the witch called Maya? I have brought the medicine that can help you wake up. Lord Chaitanya is the most munificent avatar. This Harinama Maha Mantra is the medicine that will actually free you from this material world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Maha Mantra. This Maha Mantra is what can save you. Anyway, that's my rough translation. Next time I'll actually have the songbook with me. Okay, so we're going to go on and read. Make sure I did. Whoops. Yeah. We're going to go on and continue our reading of the Jaiva Dharma. And as I mentioned many times before, what did I mention? Many times I mentioned that there's two books which Srila Prabhupada recommended that we study amongst the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, which were the Jaiva Dharma and Chaitanya Shikshamrita. So we are going to continue with our study of Jaiva Dharma. So Omaganati Miranda Shah Gananjana Shalakya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Whew. Not good to be blind in the darkness of ignorance. All right. So, let us continue. Here's the Jaiva Dharma. We're sharing the screen now and getting it set up so we can see what's going on simultaneously. Okay, that's good. Okay, here we are in the middle. So we were talking about, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about, there's a path of rules called the Vidhimarg, and then there's the Raghunuga process or marg. And there's devotees who are following the footsteps of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and under the instructions of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who don't necessarily follow all the injunctions in the scriptures. And the reason we don't follow the injunction in the scriptures is, as I quoted yesterday, that most of the Vedas are dealing with people in the three modes of material nature, at lower stages than those who have taken up devotional service. Actually, there are different levels. I mean, for example, if someone is addicted to eating meat, then the Vedas recommend that you offer a goat to the goddess Kali once a month on the full moon day and whisper to the goat's ear. What do you whisper? Mamsavakadati, which means in the next life you will get a chance to eat me, Prabhu. Which is kind of disheartening. So, there are rules for ordinary people, there are rules for fallen people, there's rules for whatever level you're at in approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's rules to worship the demigods, there's rules to worship the ghosts and spirits, there's rules about lusty behavior, the Kama Sutra, there's rules for everybody, different, but there's different shlokas for different folks. So we have to understand which shlokas or shlokas are applicable for us. And the way we understand it is by coming in contact with devotees, specifically as Divine Guru Srila Prabhupada and those who are following Srila Prabhupada. So let's continue reading. In the beginning, the Vedas were the scriptures. One portion of the Vedas deals with karma. Another portion deals with jnana. Another portion with affectionate bhakti. It says Karma Kanja section of the Vedas, Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas, and although it's not mentioned here, the section that deals with bhakti and impersonalism is called Upasana Kanda section of the Vedas. Basically, it's generally broken into those three different categories. All the jivas bound by Maya have attained various conditions. Some are extremely foolish, and some have knowledge to some extent. Some have great knowledge. According to the condition of the jiva's intelligence, scripture gives corresponding injunctions. This is called qualification, adhikar, you know, what one is qualified for. Though qualifications are innumerable, since there are innumerable jivas, in other words, there's a limited jiva, so each one has his own qualifications. According to the prominent qualities, unlimited qualifications have been divided into three: karma, for jnana, and for prema. Karma means, you know, people who just want to enjoy this material world. Jnana means basically people want to understand and get that H-E-L-L out of the material world. And prema means those who want to love God. Thus, three qualifications are described in the Vedic scriptures. While making the rules of the Vedas, since actions to be done and actions prohibited are prescribed according to the three qualifications, remember this, rules are applied according to the three qualifications. The designated dharma is called Vaida Dharma, dharma according to rules. Okay. When the jiva accepts this dharma according to his tendency, it is called this tendency for Vaidi, or rules. Got it? So people are given rules according to their situation. Even the Gita, Krishna says, you know, people can worship the demigods, they go to the demigods. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits go to the ghosts and spirits, and those who worship him go to him. And Krishna says, he says, as they approach me, I reciprocate with them accordingly. Where there's no tendency to follow these rules, it becomes extremely heretical. Heretical means beyond rules. That person engages in many sins. So if you don't follow any rules, then, phew, your adhikar is really low. You don't have any adhikar, basically. That person engages in many sins. His whole life is situated and acts beyond the rules. That's called a vikarmic person, or a vikarmi. Being outside the rules of the Vedas, he is designated by names such as Malalecha, etc. And the general classification is Vikarmi. The three qualifications mentioned in the Vedic scriptures have been expanded by the sages in the Sanghita scriptures. The sages have thus revealed other scriptures, like the Manu Sanghita. That's a Sanghita scripture. The sages have thus revealed other scriptures following the Vedas. Manu and other wise men wrote qualification for karma in 20 Dharma Shastras. In other words, the Dharma Shastras, okay, got it, like the Manu Sanghita, are meant for people on the level of karma. Wow. The philosophers deliberated on qualification for jnana in logical and deliberative works. Those learned in the Puranas and Pancharatna describe teachings and activities for those qualified for bhakti. Very interesting. Wow. This is really explicit. So people who pull out the Manu Sanghita and use it to criticize devotees or tell devotees they can't do this, they can't do that because they weren't born in the right body, whether it's male or female or somewhere in between, they are misapplying the Manu Sanghita in the wrong, to the wrong people, the wrong situation. All are termed Vedic. However, recent deliberators of scripture, not seeing the conclusion of all scriptures, describe the excellence of one portion, have thrown people into the hole of argumentation and doubt. So in other words, they take their favorite section, as I said, different shlokas or different folks, and they take that as the all in all. Whereas Krishna says, 15:15 in the Gita, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. I'm the purpose. I'm the knower of the Vedas. If one studies Gita, which gives the conclusion of all scriptures in a remarkable way, one can understand that if karma does not aim for at jnana, it should be rejected as heretical. Well, in other words, if you're not performing your activities to get some knowledge or at least liberation, then it's completely mundane. Again, if karma and jnana do not aim at bhakti, they both become heretical. It means heretical against the rules, against the purpose. You know, you could follow the rules, but act contrary to the purpose. I'll give you an example. Let's say there's this rule for offering the goddess Kali, a goat once a month. Okay, there's a rule. And I say, you know, as a so-called Vaishnava sannyasi, that I'd like to follow that rule. So then by following that rule, I'm acting contrary to bhakti. However, if someone, all right, in a very, very low position is addicted to eating meat, and he follows it, understanding that ultimately he has to give it up, and this process is meant to give it up, and understand the absolute, and ultimately come to Krishna consciousness, then it's not heretical anymore. Kama yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga are actually one yoga. This is the Vaishnava conclusion apparent in the Vedas. Of course, in another way, from another and point of analysis, one could say karma yoga means to serve Krishna with one's activities. Jnana yoga means to understand, to connect to Krishna with one's intelligence, like the Sankhya philosophy. And bhakti yoga means to connect to Krishna by loving devotion, the ninefold processes, beginning with hearing and chanting. First, the jiva is bound by maya, takes shelter of karma. Then, they take shelter of karma yoga. In other words, a jiva who is in illusion is interested in enjoying himself materially. Then, ultimately, he can connect to Krishna by dovetailing his activities in Krishna consciousness, and then understanding Krishna, and finally coming to the point of bhakti. If one does not show a ladder to the bound-up jiva, the jiva will not be able to ascend to the temple of bhakti. In other words, if one is on a lower level, you have to explain to them, you show them this ladder. It's just a step. Even Prabhupada talks about how the different processes of yoga that are mentioned in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, specifically Ashtanga Yoga, are different rungs. He uses this same particular example, rungs in a ladder, that means steps in a ladder. And the topmost part of the ladder, I don't even want to say step, but the pinnacle of the ladder, is bhakti yoga. As Krishna states at the end of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shadavan bhajate yomam savam me yukta tamo mataha. Of all types of yogis, the best yogi is the bhakti yogi, Krishna says. What is taking shelter of karma? Actions by the body and mind while maintaining the body is called karma, action. The word karma in this context means action. That action is of two types, auspicious and inauspicious. Okay, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur means by that is auspicious activities are give you good karma, so you get good results. Inauspicious activities are called vikarmic activities, which give you bad results. For example, killing a cow, that's inauspicious. Auspicious might be materially being charitable. By auspicious acts, the jiva receives auspicious results. Obviously, that's good karma, bad karma. By inauspicious acts, the jiva attains inauspicious results. Inauspicious acts are called sin, papa, or vikarma. That's the word I just mentioned before. Vikarma, remember that word. So the people in America, or in most civilized countries or uncivilized countries nowadays, are not really karmis. Most of them are vikarmis, to be precise. If they were karmis, they would be performing auspicious acts. Okay, not performing auspicious acts is called akarma. Not doing any darn thing. Both vikarma and akarma are bad. Auspicious acts are good. So, then here's going to be an analysis of auspicious acts. Things that are auspicious, acts are of three types. Nitya, that means eternal. Naimitika, which means temporary. Temporary auspicious acts. And kamya, which means desired acts. Kamya karmas are inferior since they act as selfish goals. Nitya and naimitika karmas are taught in the karma scriptures. Considering what is good and bad, the scriptures call them nitya, naimitika, and kamya karma. They do not consider akarma or vikarma to be karma. And a vikarma, in one sense, is bad karma, so it's not karma. And akarma means not doing a damn thing, sorry for the French, is not considered karma. It's the absence. Since kamya karma, that means doing what one wants selfishly, is rejected as inferior, nitya and naimitika karmas are called karma. In other words, okay, I think that's pretty. So eternal duties and temporary duties that are that are done according to the Vedic injunctions are called karmas. In other words, they give a good result. Okay? Very interesting. Actions which produce auspiciousness for the body, mind, and society and next life are called nitya karmas. Nitya karmas are actions obligatory for all. Those actions, that means you have to do it, those actions which are performed periodically but are obligatory, like nitya karmas means you always have to do it, are called naimitika karmas. Sanja vandana, protecting the body, mind, and society by pure methods, truthful conduct, protecting those to be protected are called nitya karmas. So in other words, you got to do it all the time. Not all the time, but at a specific schedule. Obligatory rites for deceased parents and atonements for sins committed are called naimittika karmas. In other words, sometimes you do them, sometimes you don't, because your parents aren't dying all the time. And hopefully you're not making sins all the time. With the intention of making arrangements so that nitya and naimittika karmas could be performed nicely in the world, the writers of scripture arrange for a dharma called varnashrama. So varnashram, varnashram means dividing society up into Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and then also the ashramas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Varnashram, on considering mankind's nature and natural qualification. The gist is that men qualified for karmas are by nature of four types, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. So karma in this particular sense means auspicious activities. Got it? Situated in these types, they have four divisions called ashrams, which I just mentioned. These are four: Grihastha, married, Brahmachari, single student, Vanaprastha, retired, and Sannyasi, renunciate. Those who are fond of akarma and vikarma, that means outside of this whole system of doing auspicious activities, are called antyaja in Varna, and nirashrami, that means without an ashram, nirashrami, and antyaja, they're rejected. The varnas, that means whether we are Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, are determined by nature, birth, and actions. When varna is determined only by birth, the purpose of the system is destroyed. In other words, it's not an hereditary system, although your genes and upbringing in a particular family can shape you in a particular way, still you're free to gravitate to other situations according to your psychophysical nature. In general, you will say, or we will observe, that people who have a particular nature have children with a similar nature. But there are exceptions. Narada Muni's mother was, you know, low class. And his father, you know, we don't even know who his father was. Maybe even the mother didn't know who the father was. Yet he became the greatest of Brahmins. The ashramas are determined according to marriage condition, unmarried condition, condition of detachment, and giving up relationships with women. Married condition is the Grihastha ashram. The unmarried condition is the Brahmachari ashram. That means bachelors. The condition of renunciation of women is Vanaprastha and Sannyas. Sannyas is the best ashram of all. Brahmana is the best varna. So you may say, so everyone should take sannyas. No. Because one has to be aware of what one is capable of doing long term. In our Krishna conscious movement, we had many young people who took sannyas, and they had unrealistic expectations of their own abilities insofar as giving up certain types of sensual enjoyment. The conclusion is expressed in Bhagavatam, the crestual of all scriptures. Varnanam ashramanam cha janmabhum yanusarane asan prakriti orindam nichar nichotamottamaha. According to the place of birth, on the universal form, the various varnas and ashrams of human society appeared with inferior and superior natures. Of course, the Brahmana is out of the mode of goodness. The Kshatriya is in the mode of passion, generally. It's not purely passionate, but mainly passionate. The Vaishya is of the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and the Shudra is of the modes of ignorance, or the mode of ignorance. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:17-15. So here's the quality of the Brahman. This is from the Gita, this next verse. Oh no, it's actually from the Bhagavatam, but it's similar. Sorry, it starts out with the same Sanskrit as the Gita. The Gita is Samadhamattapaksha Chaum, Shantir Arjun Mevacha Genavigyanamasti Kyam Barmakama Subhavajam. So that's why I thought it was from the Gita. So it starts out with the same words, the same four words. This is from the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 17th chapter, 16. Shamodamastabakshocham santosha shantirajavam madbhaktischa dayasatyam brahma prakritiyastyo tvima. Control the mind, control the senses, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simplicity, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the brahmanas. So if you have that, these qualities, then you're a Brahman. You're able to control your mind with the intelligence, of course, control your senses, and you gravitate towards austerity, you're clean, you're satisfied with whatever you have, you're tolerant of happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, heat and cold, etc. You're simple in life, not complex, opulence, etc. And you're devoted to Krishna, and you're merciful to everybody, and you tell the truth, then you're probably a Brahmin. So next verse. Tejo balam jati shauryam itikshal daryam udyama staryam ramanyam aishvaryam shatra prakutayas tvima. Energy, bodily strength, determination. These are the qualities of a kshatriya. Energy. Bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to the brahmanas, and leadership are the natural qualities of the kshatriyas. This is Bhagavatam 11, 17, 17. So if you have a lot of energy, but not just like crazy energy, and you're strong and determined, because the brahman is also determined, but he's not usually that strong. And you're heroic, ready to sacrifice your life and dive into the fire to save someone in a burning house. And you're also tolerant. You know, someone fires an arrow at you, you just pluck it out and just go on fighting. You're generous, you give charity, you're enthusiastic, you just remain fixed in your determination to protect people and win a battle, and you're devoted to the Brahmins, then you're probably a Kshatriya. And leadership, the natural qualities of the Kshatriya, and you're a leader, natural leader. So, astikyam dana nishtacha atambo brahma sevanam atushtir artha pachayhar vaishas prakutayas tvima. Faith in Vedic civilization, dedication to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to the brahmanas, dissatisfaction, desire to accumulate money, the natural qualities of the vaishnavas. So, if you have faith in the Vedic literatures, Vedic civilization, you give charity to others, and you're a very charitable person, and you don't lie. Hypocrisy means to say one thing and do something different. You're consistent between your actions and your words. You're willing to serve the brahmanas, and you really want more and more and more and more money, dissatisfaction and desire to accumulate money. You're never satisfied with a certain amount. You want more and more. They're the natural quality. Then you know you're a Vaishya. If every time you go someplace, you're thinking of how to make a profit, then you're a Vaishya. So, Shushushanam Dvijagavam Devanam Chapyamayaya Tachalabena santoshta shudra prakatakyastvima. Service without duplicity to the higher varnas, cows, devatas, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained by such service are the natural qualities of the shudra. Bhagavatam 11, 17, 19. So if you just really want a master, Prabhupada said that is the Shudra's mentality. He says sometimes people are looking for jobs and they're just looking like a dog for a master. If you really need a master, someone to tell you what to do, and you're really happy with that, then you may be a Shudra. And you just want to serve. And you're satisfied, you know, whatever you have, whatever is given to you, then that's a natural quality of a Shudra. And here's the outcast people. Ashocham manritam steyam nastikyam shukha vigraha kamakroda siddharshascha svabhava na ja vasayanam. Dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, sorry about that. Useless quarrel, lust, anger, hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the Varnashram system. 11, 17, 20, Bhagavatam. So, if you're dirty and you tell a lie, you thief, you like to take things from people, you don't have much faith in Krishna, you're quarreling, you go on the internet, and Facebook, and just start quarrels, and you can't control your lust, you start getting angry at everybody. You're just hankering for different sense gratification. You're a Shudra. I mean, not Shudra, you're outside the Varnashram system. So, ahimsa sacham asteyam akamakrata lobhata bhuta priya hite hacha dharmo yam sarvavarnika. Nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. So these are the duties for all members of society, although those outside the Varnashram system basically don't really follow this, so they have to be controlled by the leadership of society, although that may sound to be cruel. So nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of others, freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. So people won't follow that voluntarily, will have to follow it involuntarily. That's from the Bhagavatam 11, 17, 21. In the learned gathering, just on hearing the words of scripture, everyone understands the meaning. Thus I will not translate the verses. All I'm saying is that the varnas and ashrams are the basis of Vedic life, where arrangements of varnashram are absent, in those places a dharma is prevalent. Now why is that? Why would that be? Because varnashram means that the brahmanas are ultimately the guides of society. And so the brahmanas, having connection with spiritual knowledge, the goal of life, and not being controlled by desires of wanting more and more, or conquering others like Kshatriyas have, or sense gratification like Shudras have, they're able to guide the society in a way where there's no conflict of interest. The other classes have a conflict, generally conflicts of interest. I mean, for example, if you put a Vaishya in charge of society, guess what happens? He wants to make money through his position, or power through his position, or a Kshatriya wants to get power through his position. So that's why even though the Kshatriyas are the kings, they're controlled by the Brahmanas. Because the Kshatriyas may have the tendency to get more and more power. So the words nitya and naimitika are used in two senses in relationship to karma. If one considers the deep meaning of the scriptures, the two words are not used in the spiritual sense in relation to karma. So in other words, okay, let me explain what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here. Nitya, when used in relationship to karma, is not used in a spiritual sense. When it's used in relationship to bhakti, it's used in a spiritual sense. Because nitya means what? Eternal. And naimitika means occasional. So in relationship to spiritual life, you may have eternal duties, like hearing and chanting, and you may have temporary duties. And a relationship to karma, that is in this world, karma, you know. In this place, in this particular situation, karma means su-karma or good karma, not v-karma or a-karma. Then that means something different. Nitya and naimitika mean something different. Here, one cannot use the words nitya-dharma, nitya-karma, Nitya Sat Tattva, Nitya Satcha, except in relation to the jiva's pure spiritual state. So here, you know, Nitya Karma, Nitya Tattva, Nitya Satcha. Okay, Nitya Karma means eternal dharma. Nitya Karma means eternal activities. Nitya Tattva means the eternal identity of the jiva. Nitya Satcha means the eternal truth, except in relationship to the jiva's pure spiritual state. So you're getting some of these words used in different contexts. So here, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to explain it some more. When using the word nitya, to describe karma, in other words, when you say nitya karma, when considering that karmas can be called nitya only in a figurative sense, because they're not actually eternal duties. Everyone understands that? I mean, it's pretty easy to understand. It's not really nitya karma, although it may be called nitya karma, because nitya karma means the duties you always have, but that's a figurative sense, because in an absolute sense, nitya karma means devotional service and the activities of devotional service. Since in samsara, it is a great distance from nitya tattva, eternal truths. In other words, because in the material world, samsara means the material world, or repeated birth and death, it's not really connected with nitya tattva. That means eternal, your eternal category. What is your nitya tattva? Jivana Swarupa Krishna. Jiva Swarupa Krishna, Nitya Krishna Das. You're eternally a servant of Krishna. Nitya Krishna Das, you're eternally a servant of Krishna. So that's your Nitya Tattva in relationship with your Nitya Dharma. But Nitya Dharma in the material world is only used in a figurative sense when it's in relationship to good karma. Because here Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, Jivana Swarupa Hoy Nitya Krishnas. Okay, got that proper. So karma is never nitya or eternal. That's why we say it's the word karma, nitya karma is only figurative. It's not real because it's never eternal. Karma is not eternal. When karma searches out jnana by karma yoga, when jnana aims at bhakti, then karma and jnana are called nitya or eternal in a figurative sense. Does everyone understand this? It's not in a real sense because they're preliminary activities, and you can call them nitya because they're figurative, but not in an absolute sense or the direct definition of the word nitya. Calling a brahmana's sanja vandana, nitya karma. So brahmana's sanja, in other words, is the chanting the Gayatri mantras and prayers that the brahmana does at certain times of the day, sunrise, midday, and sunset. So that's called the Brahmana Sanja, Nitya Karma, calling the Brahmana Sanja Vandana, his prayers at midday, Nitya Karma, when among actions for the material body, its goal is bhakti's distance, it's called Nitya since it aims to produce something Nitya. So in other words, sometimes you can call something, let me rephrase that, sometimes you can call a particular activity nitya because it aims to produce something nitya, even though it's not nitya. And this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Actually, it is not eternal. Using that name is figurative. So using the phrase nitya karma to describe a brahmana's obligatory duties, such as the sandana vandana, prayers at the three times of day, can be used. You can use that terminology because it aims ultimately, if the brahmana is aiming ultimately at going back to Godhead and becoming a devotee, It could be called Nitya Karma, but it's actually not Nitya Karma, but it's used figuratively as Nitya Karma because it's connected somehow or other to ultimately achieving the Nitya Karma. Hope that makes sense. In reality, this is what I'm saying, in reality, Krishna Prema is the only Nitya Karma for the jiva. So although, let me just reiterate, although we call the brahmana's activities, the obligatory activities the brahmana does every day, etc., as Nitya Karma, they're not Nitya Karma, but we can still use the term Nitya Karma because they're aimed at Nitya Karma, but they're not Nitya Karma. Does everyone understand that? Because you're going to run into some brahmanas who are going to say, you know, I'm doing my Nitya Karma, I got my Vandana, my prayers, my pulling out my guy, my Brahman thread like this. That's my Nitya Karma. No. It's not your Nitya Karma, but we will allow you to call it Nitya Karma because if you have it as the goal to ultimately achieve Nitya Karma, yes. Nitya can mean daily in this particular case or regulative. You know, you could say also, not necessarily daily, it can mean like every month you're supposed to do a particular activity, like the full moon or whatever. I'm not sure of all the Nitya Karmas for Brahmanas because that's a very ritualistic point. Not necessarily daily, but it means your obligatory duties that you do on a regular basis. Therefore, we're called Nitya. But it's not really Nitya, but we allow you to use the word Nitya because they're for a Nitya purpose. But it's not Nitya, so it's only figurative. Okay, in reality, Krishna Prema is the only Nitya Karma for the jiva. Its truthful name is pure spiritual cultivation, Vishuddha Chid Anushilana. Those actions which take support of material actions for attaining Prema and assist Nitya Karma Prema may be called Nitya. In other words, you can use that term if you want, because they're meant to ultimately attain Prema, but they're not actually Nitya. There's no fault in it, though, is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. From the absolute point of view, one should not call it Nitya, but Naimitika, occasional. The divisions of Nitya and Naimitika in performing karmas are only conventional, not absolute. In other words, conventional means it's used just so you'll understand the differences when someone's a ritualistic Brahmin and performing karmas, that some activities are, let's say, on a schedule, continual activities, Nitya. Naimitika means occasional, Naimitika, like the performing the Shraddha ceremony for a departed relative is Naimitika. But your Vandana, Sandhya Vandana, is Nitya because it's always performed on the schedule. You always keep doing it as long as you're in your body. But neither of them are absolutely Nitya, although you can use the word Nitya in a figurative sense. Hopefully that's understandable. It's a little technical here. So we're going to end the discussion today, and we're going to allow you all to ask questions when I allow you to unmute yourselves. Okay, so you can type in the chat window, or you can raise your hand if you know how to do it. Not raise your hand in your video, but raise your hand. If you go down to the bottom, there'll actually be an option. If you go to more, it's reactions, hand raising, things like that you can do.
I have a question.
Yes, what's the question?
First, I want to refer to the previous book we studied. I'm still finishing that one up, The Search of the Ultimate Truth. Yeah. You were reading from two PDF, and what happened, I have got hold on to the two PDF. Second one has a lot more, which you refer to later on. The first one I had, it has a very limited, the points where either some were missed in some of the PDF, or the second one has a lot more in. Just some of them missed.
I was reading from the one in the database.
I got two from internet by searching the name.
was reading from the Wanger database, so that's what I was reading from.
I'll look into it. Okay, my next question is from this book. So nitya means, I understood, is eternal or on a regular basis when referred to the karma or to the material world. But
Yeah.
nemitika means occasional.
Occasional, yeah. So
What's
it's,
that?
yeah.
I just didn't
So
understand them.
Nietzsche can either refer to regular functions that you do to ultimately achieve bhakti, or Nietzsche can refer to the condition of prema, where one has bhakti, like Jiva Swarupa Nietzsche Krishna Das. We're eternally, or your constitutional position, Nietzsche. Our Nitya Dharma is to serve Krishna. But in another context, your Nitya Dharma can refer, if you're a second initiated, to your ritualistic ceremonies you do, such as the Vandana, Sandhya Vandana. They can refer to that because if they're done for the ultimate purpose of achieving Krishna consciousness. So anyway, the word. How you're using the word, or the meaning of the word, is dependent on how you're using the word and what context you're using the word. Okay, so let's take another question. So, Jagat, you have a question?
What is desired activities? Could you give an example?
Desired activities. Okay. Let's say you. Good question. Let's say you want to get married. Hopefully not. And then what you're doing is you have certain ceremonies that are done according to the Vedic literatures to facilitate that marriage. Does that make sense?
So that's so they are it, they are religious activities.
Yeah, they are religious activities.
But how it says that they're selfish activities, but
Yeah.
the other activities are also karmakanda. They're also aimed at
Yeah,
self-realization.
I guess they're overlapping. But they would be activities executed, if you're going to call them Nitya, like Nitya karma, you would consider that activities ultimately aimed at getting Krishna consciousness. But you're in a preliminary stage. So let's say, kamya karma would be something like, you want to get married, okay, you get married. It's not Nitya, it's not Namitika, it's not obligatory. But it's what you want to do. And so if you execute that according to the Vedic system, then it can be considered auspicious activity. Because it can
Like the
be.
gopis worshiping Kamya,
Well, no, that's pure devotional service. But yes, like if a devotee was worshiping Durga to get a wife, or whatever, or Shiva, or whatever, I don't know the details, that would be kamya karma.
okay.
That's not Nitya karma, it's not Naimittika karma. But if someone dies in your family and you have to do the funeral ceremony, that's Naimittika, that's not Nitya, and it's certainly not kamya karma, unless you want them to die. And you've just done a ceremony to get rid of them. Anyway, I'm sure there's overlap between some of these descriptions of Nitya karma, Naimittika karma, and kamya karma. I'm sure that there's some overlap when you have kamya karma. I'm sure that some of that overlaps with Naimittika karma. To me, it wouldn't be a clear-cut distinction between the two of them. Because when you're doing a kamya karma, it would be that it's be it would somehow or other would have some connection with Naimittika karma. But kami karma would be something that, you know, you really desire. Or like you said, you know, wanting. I actually know one of my disciples who worshipped Katyayani to get a husband. She did the whole Katyayani vrat. Didn't bathe in the Yamuna, of course. And didn't have Krishna steal her clothes after the month was over. But she got married right afterwards. So that's kamya karma. But it's not counterproductive to achieving Krishna consciousness. If done in the right mode, you know, so someone may want that. You know, if you do a sacrifice, I mean, sacrifice to Krishna for achieving a car or something. All right, so who else has a question? You know, so there's a little technical here. I mean, this first part gets pretty technical in certain places. After that, it's not as technical. And there's more stories that illustrate some deeper philosophical points. But this is so we will understand the terminology that's used. So in other words are sometimes defined by by the context in which you find them. Like the word nitya, you know, I can say that every day I have to wake up early. So that's my nitya karma, waking up early. But that's not my eternal spiritual position, to wake up early. It's auspicious, because I'm going to Mangalarti, but it's not any part of my eternal dharma. My eternal dharma is to serve Krishna. And in my doing my eternal dharma to serve Krishna and connect to Krishna, I'm waking up early. Anyway, hope it's understandable. So I guess that's it. That's all we have time for today. And today is Ekadasi. Hope everybody chanted extra rounds and connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead today. And so we will see everybody tomorrow, same time, same station. All glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki.